Are we fine? Are we okay? Can we take our seats? I recognize, I think, two faces in this delegation. I recognize, Prof there was with us at the colloquium on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Who else was with us there? Were you there? Oh, just that I didn't see you. You were quiet that day. Did you present? Oh, no, you're just quiet, sitting there. Okay, welcome. Let's take this opportunity to welcome the delegation from the Human Sciences Research Council, the last entity to present to the committee on their annual reports. It's now a graveyard session. It's a very difficult session of the day, this one. But we hope that you are not going to take long. I'm going to hand over to the whip, Honorable Mukacha, at 4. So if we are not done by 4, she's going to take over and run the meeting, of course, with the blessing of the committee. So let's take this opportunity to hand over to the delegation. Whoever is leading the delegation will do the introduce the issues, introduce himself or herself. We prefer that people must introduce themselves individually so that we can hear your voice. Maybe you'll speak only once by introduction, and then that will be the only opportunity to speak. But yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We appreciate the opportunity to present the annual report of the HSRC. I'll start just purely by making an introduction of myself before I make some remarks later on when everybody has introduced themselves. My name is Mvuyo Tom. I'm the chairperson of the HSRC.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Crane Sodin, and I'm the CEO of the HSRC.
I'm Nasima Bacha. I'm a member of the board.
I'm Kangelani Zuma, the executive director of one of the research programs at HSRC.
I'm Charlene Swartz, executive director of the education and skills program of HSRC.
Afternoon, my name is Jacqueline Rousseau. I am the CFO.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Lekne Simbai. I'm the deputy CEO for research in the HSRC.
Okay.
Afternoon, I'm Noor Fakir, HSRC IT.
What?
HSRC IT.
Oh. IT, like
information
what?
Technology.
Yeah, but what about IT?
As in provide support to the committee.
Oh, okay. So what do you do at HSRC?
Provide support to the company.
He's our technology guru, so he's here to assist to make sure that the technology works for us.
Oh, no, we prefer to properly introduce ourselves. When you're appointed as a manager, director, officer, you know, there are designations in the workplace. They are very important. So you don't have a designation. You are just support.
IT technician.
Okay. All right. Prof, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's bad that I've got to start with a problem. We were anticipating to start at 1 o'clock, and so at 4 o'clock, I've got to be out of here as well, if allowed by the committee. but we'll try to make sure that by that
time
we're
done.
Yeah, we'll
try to finish before four.
That applies also to the other board member, Ms. Pasha, but we'll try our best. So I'm not going to be long in my introductory remarks. I will assist with the discussion later on. Chairperson, the HSRC, as is known, is a creature of legislature. It's a legislated entity, and it's a research entity. And we are here to present the annual report of 2018-2019. This is my second year in the team, but I've got my experienced former chairperson with me, Ms. Pasha. So we are here to present what we have been doing in the year 2018-2019. And it is in the context of a new era also for the HSRC, in the sense that we have just gone through our institutional review. And we have gone through that in preparation for the new strategic plan. We are at the penultimate year of the five-year plan that we found already going. But the HSRC has performed very well in most of the areas that we are supposed to report on. We will clarify where there are some challenges that we are faced with. And in the light of the issues that are so straightforward in terms of our presentation, we are going to be sequential in our presentation. And the CEO is going to present first on some of the issues, and then the next presenter will be Dr. Likeness Simbai, who is the Deputy CEO. He will present some aspects of the management as well, and then the CFO will do the last presentation. We are happy that our audit has gone smoothly as well, so there are no serious challenges in that regard. There may be areas of explanation that we need to do on the finances, but we have tried our best to be as accountable as possible regarding the funds that we get from the legislature or from the government. Part of our challenge is exactly that, and the institutional review shows those issues in terms of where should the funding for the HSRC come from. Should we rely on the external funding, or should we rely more on the internal funding of government? But those are issues that we may be able to discuss with you later, not necessarily today, when we present that institutional review, which is currently with the minister, and we may have an opportunity to present to you that independent review that was done on the HSRC. So without wasting a lot of time, I will give over to the CEO to quickly go through the part that he's supposed to present in the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So I'm going to go through these early slides fairly crisply, Chairperson. These early slides essentially explain what the vision and the mandate of the HSRC is. The first slide makes it clear that we are in this community of science councils, a science council which is essentially about human and social development. This is what distinguishes us from the other, our sister science councils. So we are all about, and go to the next one please, Mir. And it's captured in the Act for the HSRC of the 2008, for the promotion of research in the field of human sciences, and this is the critical part, in order to improve understanding of social conditions and the processes of social change. And so that's a critical distinguishing feature of what we are all about. We are all about trying to produce the kind of research which is going to help solve the country's problems. It's important that we make clear here our relationship to, say, a university which has a very much broader ambit here. Our research is about use-based research, research which is able to be put to use in terms of policy development, in terms of thinking about what the solutions might be for what the issues in the country are all about. Next one, please. And so we in terms of our act, initiate research, we stimulate public debate, we respond to the needs of vulnerable and marginalized groups in society, we address development challenges, we help with research, building research capacity, we put together data sets, which is a hallmark character heuristic of what the HSRC does. We try to inform the formulation of policy. We try to build links between the institutions of the science and innovation landscape. And we're also about trying to develop new methodologies for how you might carry out research in the human and social sciences. We measured in terms of what we call ADEPTS. So ADEPTS is the acronym that we use to classify and group the major indicators which we use to account for what we do. And the first of those indicators is about knowledge advancement. So Professor Simbai will report shortly about how we are performing in relation to these different outcome-orientated goals. So the first one is knowledge advancement. The second one is to contribute to development and social progress in South Africa and on the continent. The third one is about enhancing skills. We have many masters and doctoral students who do internships and periods of training with ourselves. We preserve data and knowledge through curating data sets. We would like to think of ourselves as a major entity promoting transformation inside of the country. And then a final, fairly operational outcome that we have for ourselves is that of financial sustainability. Before I hand over to Prof. Lightness, who will talk about how we've performed in relation to all of this, it's important to emphasize that in terms of our mandate and our strategic objectives, we've made poverty and inequality the focus of our work. Finding ways of addressing these questions of poverty and inequality are absolutely what come to give the HSRC its place in the research community in South Africa. Why poverty is so durable and why inequality remains such a stubborn reality of the South African social scene is at the absolute forefront of what we are doing in all of our programs. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Professor Simbai to tell you how well we have done in relation to those outcomes. Thank you, Professor Simbai.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon again. Honorable Chairperson and members, I have the pleasure to present how we performed in our core business. The next slide actually summarizes the overall performance. If you wish to understand how well we have performed against the targets which were set, you know, at the start of the financial year, we scored overall 78%, which is by far the highest we have scored actually over the past 4 years under the leadership of Professor Sudeen. I will unpack each set of indicators in the next slide.
Under the leadership of Professor
Sudeen.
Oh.
As CEO.
Okay.
Do you want me to acknowledge the former chairperson and the current chairperson?
No. I didn't get the name, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Next slide. So when we look at the first set of indicators which relate to advancement of knowledge and scientific excellence, we are a research institution and the indicators that I use are standard in this sector. The first set refers to the average number of peer-reviewed journal articles that are published by each researcher employed in the organization. Last year, we had set ourselves a target of 0.9, and we were able to exceed that and getting an average of 1.06 per researcher. This is from the lowest level to the highest level. If we look at the next one, it's the number of scholarly books that are published. These must be peer-reviewed to ensure that they are of good quality. We had set a target of 14 books, and we again exceeded that target as we were able to publish a total of 18 books. The next indicator refers to scholarly book chapters. And here the target had been 54, and we were able to nearly double the number of book chapters which we managed to publish. Next slide. Moving on, one way in which we disseminate or share information with people both within and outside of HSRC, we conduct seminars usually on a weekly basis to which members of the public are also invited, and people from government. And actually, members of this August committee should also receive invitations to attend some of these seminars. We link up our offices here in Cape Town, in Pretoria, Durban, and Pietermaritzburg. The target we had set was 40, and we were able to hold 51 of these. And then we also have a quarterly publication called the HSRC Review, which is also widely shared. In it, we try to digest some of our research findings and to present them in a readable way so that people can understand some of the issues which we are trying to address. The target was 4, and we were able to meet that. Next, one of the mandates of the HSRC is to develop what we call policy briefs. Our primary mandate is to come up with policy options which we share with a number of line departments in government, mostly. And we had set a target of 10 of these policy briefs, and we were able to exceed that as we managed to do a total of 18. Nextly, another way of trying to engage with stakeholders from across the country, we hold what we call public dialogues. We move around the country, and we had set a target of 4 of these public dialogues, specifically to address issues related to poverty and inequality. As an example, at least one of them did address the issue of race, among others. We set a target of 4, and we were able to deliver on all 4. In terms of the next indicator, one important measure of how well a research institution or even individual researchers do is by looking at the impact of their publications. So we have this indicator called citation of peer-reviewed journal articles. The ideal is to publish as much in what are called high-impact journals, which means ideally a lot of other people are able to read and appreciate the research that you have published. So for the past financial year, and this indicator was set a couple of years ago, and that's why it remained low, I had to explain. But for the past year, we're able then to track how many of the publications done, peer-reviewed journal articles, were cited at least 10 times within 5 years of their publication. this is but one way of measuring impact of work. And basically, the target was set at 8, because we started this a couple of years ago, and we were able to achieve a score of 171. All right, next slide. The next slide looks at how we collaborate with historically disadvantaged institutions. One of the mandates of the HSRC is to help develop research capacity, and we have deliberately identified HDIs as our partners. So essentially, we had a target of working with at least 5 of them, and we were able to collaborate in various ways, for example, doing research together, or some of the staff in the HSRC, honorary professors at the various HDIs. So we were able to overachieve on that target as well. Next slide. The first indicator on which you will see that we failed to meet our target is the one which we call African Research Fellows. This was created historically to try to encourage experienced African researchers, people who are based in other African countries, to come and spend some time at the HSRC. Originally, it was for a period of 3 to 5 years. It's grown increasingly difficult to recruit people because of the immigration processes. I think it also has to do with the sector we are in, that perhaps the people we are looking for are not rated highly in terms of the scarce resources that the country needs. We've actually performed, that's the best we have done to date. We were short of one. We were able to bring up to 10 people who are meant to spend time with us, and after their contracts are over, they go back to their country of origin. Closely related to that is another way we see how we are working together with colleagues from the other African countries. And here the indicator is counting the number of peer-reviewed articles that are co-published with researchers who are based at universities outside of the country, in other African countries. And then, again, we started low. We had set a target of 8, and that is increasing as we go on. We started this a couple of years. We were able to achieve 10. Let's move on to the next slide. The next slide really starts to highlight, again, our mandate with regards to capacity building. And we have several ways in which we do this. Three of the outcomes are indicated in this slide, in that we do recruit master's level students who are registered at other South African universities, at South African universities in the main, but we give them experiential training in research. So we are supposed to be enriching what they are doing and also assisting them where it is possible so that they can complete their degree. Those we call master's research interns. We have set a target of 36. Again, we were able to achieve that target. The next level is PhD level. Again, the principle is the same as applied at master's level. There are PhD students registered at mainly South African universities who are recruited to spend with us about 3 years to start with. And the idea is that they will gain research experience by being at the HSRC, And in addition, they are also studying towards fulfilling the requirements of a PhD degree. And we had a target there of 46? Okay. It shows you I can't see. I should be looking closer to what I got in front of me. I apologize for that. And in fact, we exceeded that target because we had 54. Sorry, I have to look at my slide in front of me. Moving on, we don't stop there. We go to postdoctoral level. Again, we give opportunities for people who have just completed their PhDs to come and join the various research programs that we have with a view, again, of improving their conduct of research and also encourage them to publish from their PhDs. And we had set a target there, and I hope I'm looking at the correct figure of 20. I'm pleased to say we were able to meet that. All right. The next slide shows the completion rates of both master's on the left and PhD research interns on the right. It's worth highlighting here, and it might explain why the numbers are relatively low. It's really beyond the control of the HSRC who graduates and who doesn't graduate. However, we do assist interns who are registered at either master's or PhD level. Remember, they are all registered at universities. So in a few cases, they are lucky where their supervisor at the HSRC might also be supervising them at a university. But in most cases, they have different sets of supervisors. We had set a target of 6 of the masters to finish last year, and we were able to get up to 10 of them succeeding. You will see with regard to PhDs, the target had been 8, but only 4 were able to complete. Thank you. Moving on to the next slide, one of the new innovations, again, which we started a couple of years ago, was to build in what we call training academies. And I'm actually pleased that the two colleagues who are executive directors have been driving this initiative. And what they do, they organize training in research methodology, both qualitative and quantitative. And we have, again, been doing this in conjunction with some HDIs. So we have gone to different HDIs. In fact, last year it was Zululand. And so we had a target of 2, and we were able to do that. Again, that's part of how we contribute to building of research in our country. Moving on quickly, another of our mandates is that the data that we collect from our research should be made available for others to use afterwards. So basically because, as will be explained later, most of the research that we do is actually funded externally, meaning we look around for funding. Once the reports are done, basically we allow ourselves a year in which to mine the data to be able to publish some peer-reviewed papers, which is what I started with. But after a year, the information is then archived so that people can be able to access the data from anywhere in the world. Anyone who is interested in the kinds of topics that we are researching on. So again, each year we set a target. Last year it was 10. We were able actually to archive more than double the number of data sets. you know, preserving data is but one thing. The important issue is, are people using that information? And that's what the right-hand side of this slide is showing. We are able to monitor how many people access the data, some of the data sets that are archived. And we have set this target of 472 for the previous financial year, and we did manage 661. These are people, we do know where they are located. You can actually plot a graph in the world to show where they are bested. And what's important is that it does include students from, usually students and researchers from within South Africa, and interestingly, a few from even government departments. Let's move on to the next page. Oh, next slide. All right. An indicator which we, well, the next slide basically is showing the percentage of senior researchers who are African. Here we are trying to address the issue of institutional transformation. And instead of reporting on all the four racial categories, we just pick one and highlight that. The target that we set, and please note, it refers to senior researchers. So these are people who are at a senior research manager or senior research specialist level. Often that requires one to have a PhD. But as a senior research manager, you can have a lot of experience. So we showcase the proportion who are African. What this slide is showing is overall. If we exclude the 9% who are not South Africans and actually look at the employment equity definition, that figure goes up to 42.24%. Right? I hope that's self-explanatory there. Whereas if we look at the proportion of senior researchers who are female, again, just looking at senior researchers only, then the proportion of those who are female is a bit higher at 43.53%. Basically, in this case, in both cases, we do not meet those two targets. And if you go right at the beginning, that's why we have a zero there. I wish to clarify a bit more. If you were to look at overall the racial composition of the HSRC as an organization, it's predominantly African. Probably upwards of 80% are African. But this is looking specifically at senior researchers. Thank you. Shall we move on to the next slide? The next slide shows the issue of sustainability of the organization. We do receive through this parliament a generous grant, which it will be explained later how we use that. But to be able for us to deliver on the rest of our mandate, which is to undertake that research in social sciences and humanities in the country, we get a lot of support from outside. And maybe I need to qualify, those extra parliamentary might actually, some of them, be parliamentary because they go through another line department rather than directly through DSI to the HSRC. But quite a substantial portion, for example, with our health-related research, is actually from the American government through PEPFAR. So in terms of the target we set for the past year, the external target was 48%. The idea was that we would get 52% through the parliamentary grant. We were, however, only able to achieve 45.54%. But we just fell short of our target there. And the last, on the right-hand side, that's the last slide which I'll talk about. One of the strategies which we have developed to ensure sustainability of the organization is to have what we call multi-year grants. Instead of people, researchers, looking for funds each and every year, we want for a substantial portion of the external income to come through multi-year grants. And therefore, this is one indicator which is really important for us in terms of our sustainability. We had set ourselves a target of 56%, and we did exceed that in the past financial year because we were able to attract 58.75%. I thank you. I will pass on to the CFO to go through the financial section of the report. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, CFO.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. First of all, the audit outcome. So we received our unqualified audit opinion from the AGSA. But we did have material findings, specifically on compliance with laws and regulation. This is in regard to the irregular expenditure to the amount of $1.1 million. Now, I would like to highlight that the organization and management detected this irregular expenditure. We have now matured to a point where we can detect it, but we need to mature more so that we can prevent it. And I think that's where we're going to put our focus in the next year. Now, of this 1.1, we've got two main items that was in the operations and in the nature to deliver our outputs for the organization. The first amount was about $665,000, which was 60% of this irregular expenditure, and it was due to the increased blood samples that we had for the transgender project. Because of operational and the time frames, we could not go back and reissue and retender, and we had to have this deviation. The other one as well, which is making up 29% of the 1.1 million, is 331,000, and that relates it to increased courier costs for the organization. As I've said, we've matured to a point where we can report, but we must now go further and prevent irregular expenditure in the organization. We had no adjustments to the annual financial statements, the figures, but the last one, we didn't have any material findings raised in terms of our performance information, but some was reported incorrectly, but it was fixed by the organization before the audit was completed. Although we've got an unqualified, we do not have a clean audit because of these material findings. On the next slide, we've got the statement of financial position. I'll take you through it, but I'm not going to go into details, the differences and the variance from the 1 year to the next year. As the 2017-18 figures on the right-hand side was an anomaly year for the organization, which I'll further discuss in the slides to come. I just want to highlight that our debtors, our trade and other receivables did increase, and that's due to our debt increasing at 120 days, with 14.4 million. But our provision for impairment also increased, but the provision only increased with 3 million. On the next slide, I've got the assets. Just to paint the picture for the committee, we've got total assets of 539.9 million, of which 79% is non-current assets, and only 21 is current assets. The current assets is mainly made up of our trade and other receivables, which is 50%, our cash and cash equivalent, which is 39%, and then we've got a small prepayment that we've got. Our non-current assets is 100% almost made up of our property, plant, and equipment, which includes our own building in Pretoria. Our property, plant, and equipment is 423.6 million of that amount. The next slide, I've got a snapshot of the liabilities. Again, the increase is mainly in the trade and other payables, which increased with 18%, and that's more towards the accruals at year-end of 6.5 million. The VAT, we last year had a VAT receivable. It's a timing difference. This year, we've got VAT payable of 5.8 million. Our income received in advance has decreased, with about 9.4% in the current year as well. The next slide is just again showing the picture. So our current liabilities is now more. It's 97% of our total liabilities, with only 3% made up of non-current liabilities. For current liabilities, 51% is trade and other payables of 42.9 million. We've got income received in advance of 43%, and only a small the VAT payable as discussed. Our non-current liabilities is 86% made up of the post-retirement medical aid that we offer for employees that's gone on retirement. That's only 2.5 million. The next slide just indicates now the net assets, which is normally your assets minus your liabilities. Now the biggest chunk of this, the 73%, is our accumulated, our reserves. Our revaluation reserves make up the reserves. We've got non-current assets, which is a small amount, and then our current liabilities is the 16% that we've got there. The next slide, we've got the financial statement of performance. I'm going to concentrate first on the revenue. So yes, in the current year, our revenue has declined, but the figures that we're comparing it to, the 2017-18 figures, was an anomaly year. But I'll do take you through some of the major highlights. We had a decline of 65 million in terms of our research income. We had a decline in the international funding of 36 million. This 65 million is made up of the following. We had a decline in international funding of 36 million, which is a 32% decline. We had a decline in the private sector, which is about 34.2 million. But we did have an increase in the universities of 3.5 million. We also had a decline of 3.1 million in our parliamentary grants. And our other operating revenue also declined by 2.4 million. This is mainly due to our rental income recoveries as well as our interest. Due to our cash flow position we found ourselves in, more of the money had to go for operational instead of lying in the bank to get the interest. The next slide shows now the last couple of years, and here you can see, specifically in terms of the research revenue, that the 17-18 year was an anomaly where it went up to 244 million for that specific year. But of 15-16, it was 160, 164, it shot up and then it went down to 179 for that specific year. You can also see the trend line for the parliamentary grant growing 1 year, then receding in the next. Our other income has been quite stable with minimal progress over a couple of years. I would like to now show you the budget versus the actual for that same period again, where we exceed some years and we're below in some years. But unfortunately for the 18-19 years, we were below. We only got 485 million of our projected 531 million revenue. Now, mainly our research revenue was underachieved by 16% or 34.7 million. This is due to the absence of some flagship projects in the 18-19 year, with most of them being completed in the 17-18 financial year. But we have secured multi-year big projects, which will commence in the current year, 1920. Other operating revenue was also understated by 21% or 10.8 million. Again, it was the interest earned on our unspent funds And our cafeteria in the Pretoria branch also closed down during the current financial year under review. Next, I'm going to look at the expenditure. So, again, I just want to highlight, because of the revenue declining, the expenditure declined as well. So our expenditure declined by 70.9 million or 12.7%. Our administration is down by 4.9 million or 9.6%. Our research cost was down by 80.9 million or 46% due to these research projects not taking place. Our staff costs only increased by 10.6 million or 3.8%. which is less than CPI. Other operating expenses, that obviously also increased by 9.9%. Our depreciation and amortization, that increased by 10.2%. On the next slide, we've got a pie chart just indicating in terms of the annual report where the money or the revenue that we received went. Now, our operating expenditure is about 37%, but the biggest component being our personnel costs, 60%. As we are a service delivery organization, that is where most of the budget is going to be spent, and only 3% went to depreciation and amortization. That's in terms of the annual financial statement. The next slide indicates National Treasury's definition of the cash. Where did the cash go? In terms of this one, we look at the physical cash flow. So on this one, there's a small change. 62% went to compensation of employees, where 38% went to goods and services. But a very small amount was spent on capital expenditure. And we're feeling that now. We need to now look into our IT assets and refresh them going forward. The next slide has got the expenditure just against the budget again that we've got, the actual versus budget. Obviously, our budget was geared to have more income, and respectively, those expenditure decreased as well. So for administrative, we underachieved by 25%, or 15.6 million. For research cost, we underachieved by 19%, or 22.2 million. Our staff cost, it looks almost the same, but we actually managed it to underachieve by 412,000. Depreciation was overachieved. This, unfortunately, it's the depreciation of the assets. It's the replacement value and how we're writing off those assets. And lastly, the other operating expenses, again, we underachieved by 21% or 9.8 million. Here's the revenue analysis that I would like to bring to your attention. We've plotted out different revenue streams. Obviously, the more red line indicates our research revenue. Now, our parliamentary grant is the grayish line at the top, showing that it's climbing steadily, but some years also declining. Our other income is the one at the bottom, where our other income has been steady, but it's not bringing towards the real income of the organization. The line that we're bringing in, the dark brown line, is our salaries. So we're trying to see if the parliamentary grant at least can cover our salary bill. And that took place in the 2010, 2011, 2012, 2015, and 2016 financial years. But now, since 2017, that has not taken place. And now, currently, our other revenue is supposed to fund our salary bill for us to be sustainable. And that's the position that we're finding ourselves in. Now remember, we're talking about the salary bill that needs to cover our PhD interns, our master interns, as well as our postdoctoral fellows and master's interns that we take into our corps to be able to provide the service that we are doing. This cannot be done on a project-wide basis, otherwise we cannot build our own capacity. The next slide, I am just indicating our top expenditure for the two financial years. Again, I wanted to highlight them, but again, 2018 year is a bit difficult in terms of everything being down in terms of what we've done. Our staff cost increased, as indicated, by 10.6 million, but only 3.8%. Our direct research costs declined by 50.6 million, or 40% against that year. Our rentals, maintenance, repairs, and running costs, it increased by 1.7, but it's only 5.8% if you look at it from year to year. So we did have some savings in terms of our rental costs. Our direct research labor costs also decreased, as expected, with the projects being down. Our annual license fees, library, manuscripts, and subscriptions, that increased with 1.3 million, or 10%, which is market-related, as we're getting this from third-party suppliers. But we did manage, in terms of our telecom, postal, and delivery fees, to decrease with about 4%, and our travel and subsistence decreased by 7,000, or 0.1%, in terms of what we're trying to bring in some savings. The last slide I've got is the up and down. Remember now, this expenditure is the percentage over the total expenditure for the year. So for staff operating or staff costs, it was 60% of the expenses, and it increased from last year because last year it was only 51. But obviously we had more expenses to go around. So don't be fooled by that. But it's 60% in the current year of the 485.5 million, and last it was 51 of the 556 million. Our direct research costs declined, as you can see. Our rentals, it's almost the same, a percentage, but we did have a monetary saving. Our direct research labor cost went down. Depreciation, a small amount up. Annual license fee, a small amount up, but our postal telecom delivery we maintained, as well as our travel and subsistence. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. That was very detailed financial reporting. When we asked for details from science and technology, we didn't think that it will, the next entity will report as details as you have reported, but next time report like this, but in a summarized way. The rest of the information we can read. But I think this is what we want, to get a sense of the issues in the entity, financial issues. Because at the main, we appropriate money here in Parliament so that we can go and finance your activities, come back and report. So we need this kind of detail, but this was a little bit longer, but it was fine. Prof, you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I only wanted to conclude by saying that the HSRC is in a position to fulfill its mandate, the core function of which being research, whether it's research that we perform ourselves or research that we promote to be performed by others or in collaboration with others. So we've shown in this presentation that that core function is being dealt with. And of importance also, as the CEO said earlier on, is research that is relevant and responsive to the needs of society. We do hope that our research will be able to change the situation when it comes to poverty, inequality, and unemployment in the country. And so we have to account for the money that we get from the Parliament, as you have correctly said, Chair. And we have outlined that as well. We are happy to report that we can account for each and every cent, even the irregular expenditure that we have seen. It's not wasteful expenditure, it's expenditure that was necessary but was not done in accordance with the regulations that we are supposed to follow. But it can be accounted for in full. So we thank you for this opportunity to make the presentation, and we'll welcome any questions and comments that the honorable members would like to make. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Any takers, are we happy with the report? Honourable members, Honourable Mananis. Yeah, just two hands and we're done. Honourable Mananis, Honourable Gates, and then Honorable Bosch of the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know you've got interest in terms of money, and you said it all that you follow the money where it goes. I want to ask on page three, on the issue of your strategic outcome-orientated goals, where you speak about transformation, you're speaking that transforming at senior level to reflect the national demographic composition with respect to race and gender. So as you can see that your delegation is boys choir and it's very grayish. So I want to check if you've got plans in terms of absorbing young people into the senior leadership as well, because your document speaks nice about transforming the senior level. The other one is on page 5. On the issue of, I want to check where did you conduct this public dialogues. I just need some indication if you've got a response today with regards to that. And with on your report of achieving more than what you could have targeted, I want to check, Honorable Chair Kore, what are the, in terms of monetary value, was the money used to achieve more than what you could have targeted, or it was just sponsors from, I just want to check the monetary value there of your higher achievement than what you could have expected. On page 9, there on your slide, you indicated that on the issue of your percentage senior researchers who are female, as this particular committee, our interest is not only about certain sex or, in terms of it's female and male, it's sex, it's not gender. So it is not our interest to know how many women have you lifted and so on. Ours is to understand if youth are being accommodated as or mainstreamed within your plans, people with disability as well, and the LGBTIQA plus society. Because as HR, HSRC, you must be able to speak better than other people in terms of your gender demographics. So I want to check if you, do you have reports with regards to that, or if not, can you make sure that next time you input all those specifics. Lastly, Chairperson, it was good that we were learned by the Auditors General people, and now we clear that as this particular portfolio committee, the irregular thing, it's not nice music. And it is nice that on your conclusion, you when the chair was speaking, he alluded that you're trying to improve. So we hope next time we won't be hearing anything irregular, and then people are celebrating unqualified audit, clear audit, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gabe.
Very brief, Chair. Look, I think let me first welcome the report and again thank everyone who came here when they were summoned to come here into Parliament. So, Chair, one of the mandate or the objectives of the HSRC is to stimulate public debate through effective dissemination of fact-based research. This question is just going to, because I know we are sitting here with professors and doctors, right? And perhaps to challenge them, in terms of how we view our publications in this country, perhaps even the work that they have done, because in most instances, your journals, publications that are being, been published per se, they are not being properly disseminated to the correct constituency where they should be, right? And, I know some of you to be professors, you had to go and publish some of these journals, right? And ask yourself how many of your journals that we have published, how many people have read your journals? What kind of impact did that particular journal make in the public or society in general? Because we ought to create a,
an environment where we do not just research for the sake of excelling to move to the next level or to move to the next position, right? And that goes back to what we have raised here in terms of where is that page? The knowledge advancement that you are advancing the excellence in the social sciences, right? But when we look at the social integration or the social engineering of, you know, the most important segment of the population in this country, which is young people, perhaps to look, I don't know if this will be relevant to, you know, the psychologists or not, but you can conduct that research and look into it. Perhaps the behavior of young people, especially those who are in the basic education, have you as the human science, I mean, the Human Science Research Council, looked into that? I mean, we cannot just conclude that that is how young people, black young people, will ordinarily behave. Every week, someone is being killed in these primaries and high schools. What research, perhaps, that we have conducted or that we are busy conducting, that can really arrest that particular situation that is unfolding in the basic education? So that's what I wanted to raise, Chair. I didn't want to be long, and I did not want to be much more radical, as you always accuse me. I wanted to be as basic as that, because I know, researches, many of researches or the publications are not being read. And one would even go back to the transformation agenda that my fellow honorable have spoken about, and you only mentioned the gender and the race, right? How do we use research to really transform the thinking capacity of our people? Because it is the same reason why when they look at that journal, it looks very complicated. It can only be accepted or accepted by someone who's learned that, like yourself. Someone who would want to refer some of the things that... But in terms of societal upliftment, I think there's still a lot of gray areas in that particular instance. Let me leave it there, Chair.
Leave it there, Honorable Gates. And then let's get Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was looking at the program that they were, that report speaks upon about accommodating people, students in their masters and in their PhD phases, and assisting them to complete their studies. And I thought that's a wonderful idea. When I did my PhD, I had to resign my job for 2 years. Luckily, I have a very good wife, so she could look after me. But the idea that knowledge doesn't come by itself, and that people really have to be assisted to form it, and that the HSRC, yes, that's name. It's almost like LBTGQI. You don't know if you mention all the letters. That it plays a role in that sense, and I would like to say something which may not be so popular in this grouping of ours, but according to me, that is actually where transformation should be driven. Because once you get to the senior levels, then it should be a merit-based appointment. So you have to invest in the young people, in the junior researchers, and then they have to come through. Because the main concern, if I look at the financial part, is, and if I listen to the president the other day when he said, the money is done in South Africa. We don't have money for everything that we have to do. That means our economy has to perform. And it can't be that our bottom line is always how do we perform in terms of transformational aims. We have to say, how do we perform in terms of performance? In terms of, let's say, making money or forming knowledge or whatever. So I think what the HSRC does and other institutions, by assisting young people to come through and to prove themselves and to get their degrees and even the post-doc degrees when you start competing with overseas institutions which pay with dollars and euros, I think that's very commendable, and that lays the foundation for what many members regard as the primary aim. Thank you.
Okay, that's done. Responses?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for those very insightful questions from honourable members. I'm going to answer some of them, and I'm going to hand over to some of my colleagues to answer. So I'm going to ask Charlene and Kangalani to please talk about the public dialogues. I'd also like them to talk a little bit about the training that we do with our academies and with our interns, please. But I'd like to start with Honourable Mananiso and say that your question is a very difficult one for us, Honourable Member. We've just had this review, review of the organisation, and that review counterposed two possibilities that we should be concentrating on. One was to expand our capacity to influence what is happening inside of the country by building up our senior levels, by having our people take very much more public positions, to come out more, to do a lot of what Honourable Member Kiyota is talking about. So they're saying step up, take more responsibility in the public domain. But we were also pressed, and this is the second issue which you relate to, how do you continue to raise the pipeline of young people coming through into the system? And my response to you, Honourable Member, is that we will try and come up, and hopefully we can talk about this the next time we meet you, we will try and come up with a plan of how we are able to do both of those things simultaneously. But I want to say to you that it is going to be difficult for us to be even promising that we will come here and satisfy you completely. We will try. We will try and come up with a plan which is going to also, Honourable Member Bosoff, you know, address the issue that you are raising. We are very talented young people in our organisation, but the reality is that those young people are probably 5-10 years away from taking on the kind of responsibilities that we're talking about. We can't just push them in here now, right now. They will fall, and it's not in our interest to have these young people fall before they are ready to assume those responsibilities. They are wonderful young people, and we'd like to be managing their development in ways which give us a sense of assurance that we are mentoring and supporting them in the right kind of way. I'd like our colleagues to quickly talk to us about these dialogues, please, and where these dialogues have happened. But Prof. Tom will kick us off.
Just before the dialogues and others come in, yes, we didn't address all the positions, and we focused on the seniors just because they were in the strategic plan. However, if we look at page 83 of the full report, not the slides, there is a section that deals with learning and development. In that area, you'll see how we are attending to researcher training programs, and there are numbers that are allocated to it to show how many of the master's research interns are involved, how many of the PhD research interns are involved, how many of the postdoctoral fellows are involved. In that way, we are building the pipeline. And that also goes to answer, and he's gone, about the youth the youth issues, that if you take them at that level, you are building the youth to be able to take over at some stage. And that will be in line with what the CEO has just mentioned. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Members, I'd like to just address the issue of public dialogue and give you a few examples of the range of public dialogues that we've had. So in Pretoria, for example, we had a public dialogue with landless women. And as you can imagine, that would have been quite different to a very more austere dialogue about race and racism and well-being, which we had in a hotel here in Cape Town. We've also had a dialogue on restitution in consultation and in collaboration with a number of other public partners, at which we had the Chief Justice. And that was a day where 250 people came together and put together a charter on restitution. And then we've had another dialogue around gender-based violence and teenage pregnancy that took the form of a photographic exhibition in a rural community in Vulindlela, outside Pietermaritzburg. So just to give you a range of the kinds of public dialogues we've had. And then again to the Honourable Member who isn't here, but we've got a lot of our researchers who are tweeting research results to a different audience that reads than those who read journal articles. I think that's really important. And then one of the final things that I wanted to say, one of our studies, it was entitled Studying While Black. We basically looked for 5 years at the experiences of black students at universities. And in this past year, we then went back to 14 universities and had, it's not recorded as a public dialogue, but we had 14 different dialogues with staff, students, workers on university campuses in order to disseminate the book, because we really do know that people don't just read the journal articles and the book. So a real sense of practical academic activism combined with our journal articles.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. About research that we conduct, we indeed speak to academics in terms of our the research and publications that we do. However, we do translate our research, for example, through what my DSO indicated, the HSRC review, where we repackage what we've published in academic journals and we put it in our HSRC review, which is easily readable, for example. And the other approach that we use, we go to communities. We take our research over and above the policy briefs that we do, but we take our research to communities. For example, I've got here with me our HSRC report on the South African National HIV Prevalence, Incidence, Behavior, and Communication. And this is one of the key studies that we've been conducting for the last, since 2002, which is, I say, it's a guiding book for the country to understand the dynamics of HIV epidemic, the HIV in the country. And we go to different communities, we go to meetings where we present these results so that communities can understand what HIV is all about and how we're responding as a country to HIV epidemic. We use media, for example, as my colleague has indicated, to repackage our information. But when it comes to summer schools, for example, that we organize with our historically disadvantaged institutions, for example, when we go there and we speak to young researchers and we train them, we actually use the data that we have collected, we use the information that is generated by researchers. So that is one way or another, one way that we use to translate the information that we generate, complicated as it is, that it is translated to the level that all members of our community are able to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
In a minute.
Yeah. Just to agree with all the sentiments from the Honourable Member, just belaboring the issue that my colleague, Professor Zuma, has addressed. Ideally, we want our research to be available to different types of stakeholders out there. We really do try. For example, the report which actually that only came out yesterday, Professor Zuma has been presenting that, for example, on radio. He's interviewed in Zulu. We have other colleagues who speak other languages, just to try to bring it to the level of the ordinary person. Yes, we can do more. I agree completely with you. Right. At the same time, we are a research institution, so there is this pressure that we have to perform as good as any research institution, both within the country and internationally. So your points are well taken. Just one comment on why we report on the employment equity targets. I suppose it's a requirement on the one hand. We've used that really to apply some pressure on ourselves, not to sit back. The fact that we are able to come, you know, repeatedly every year and showcase what we are trying to do, it's really so that we are not only changing at the bottom, which we have done in many ways, but as was said by the chair, we really want to make sure that people do get opportunities at that level. I think in the report, perhaps not, we're able to give breakdown of some of the categories, for example, concerning disability, but not about sexual preferences, unfortunately. I'm not sure if we can do that because people keep that information at times to themselves. And then lastly, on the issue of why we are able to achieve some targets despite the funding challenges, that's a difficult one to answer, other than to say that, as I highlighted, some projects actually are multi-year, which lends themselves to work where work has been done in previous years. The outputs, the research publications, for example, only come out at the tail end when the project is finished. So it could be that the improved performance in some years is because of what is in the pipeline, rather than solely what we have at our disposal to spend in that particular year. Maybe let me stop there.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Prof. The two profs and your team. The issue of reporting on race and gender has come up, and I think maybe when the entities were responding, we're not very firm and clear on the reason, because there is a reason. Our constitution enjoins us that we must redress the imbalances of the past. And how you address those imbalances is by taking practical steps to advance groups from races which were affected by years of colonialism and apartheid, which is your African in the main and black people in general. Black people referring to people from Indian origin and colors. So those must be advanced by whatever programs that government come up with. It's in the constitution. It's addressing equity. And of course, gender. You know, women in this country, where we call it the triple oppression of women. You know, they were oppressed on the basis of them being women, on being black, and of belonging to a particular class group. And that class is the working class. So government must take practical actions to advance women in our country. But also, we know that we must do everything in our power to advance those who are from the vulnerable groups. Young people, women, the disabled. So it is not by coincidence that all government departments, all entities, in everything they do, they must seek to advance those from those designated groups. I think this is how you should have responded to the question, but of course you have to be not only yourself, but even those who came today, because these are the historical realities of our country. Unfortunately, this is part of our history, and we must, even 25 years into democracy, things have not changed. The picture has not changed on the transformation of our country. So we are happy that we are reporting on those, because you have to take those type of actions, put the targets, and make sure that you put measures to attain those targets, because it's a necessary historical endeavor to address the imbalances of the past. So we are done today. Thank you very much, Prof. I think we know we've just finished at the right time for everybody else to leave. Thank you, honorable members. Honorable Boshoff, you want to say something?
Chairperson, yes. I'm sorry to bring this up before the guests, in front of the guests, but I received a press release which was issued about yesterday's meeting about the International Convention on the SKA, which doesn't give any account that all the opposition parties reserved their votes on the issue. And I think that is a problem. I mean, the ANC just used its majority to take it through, but all three of the opposition parties were present.
Okay, let me educate you, Honorable Boshoff. That's not how things are done. What we communicate is the decision of the meeting, and there was no objection to that. Now, what you will find that in the detailed reports and the minutes, you will get that indication that this party reserve its right, this party reserve its right, this party reserve its right. That you will find in the report and the minutes. You will not find in the statement. We can't say in the statement the majority said so, the minority said so. We are communicating a decision of the committee, which was to adopt the convention that was presented. That's how things are working, Honorable Boshoff.
Just to complete the education, next time that I want my objection being noted, I must say, I object.
No, no, you did not object. You said you reserved your right, which is what is minuted in the committee minutes. When we go to the house, you've got all the rights when we debate that to say, these are my objections and whatever. But you did not express objection. You said you are reserving. You see. No, it's education, Honorable Nodada. Don't be. Okay. So thank you, honorable members. Next week is higher education. I hope you are ready. Thursday is colloquium on funding of post-school education. So thank you very much. We are done. Yeah.